As the June 30th deadline approaches for the transfer of power from the U.S. to the Iraqi transitional government, one question is whether a country that was artificially created by foreign powers in past centuries will be able to overcome that past. Morning Edition's Steve Inskeep has two conversations about the history of Iraq.
The first conversation is about a British official who was present at the founding of modern Iraq, Winston Churchill. The future prime minister was Britain's colonial secretary after the First World War, when British troops occupied the area then known as Mesopotamia. In a book called Churchill's Folly, the author Christopher Catherwood suggests many parallels between the British occupation then, in the 1920s, and the U.S. occupation now. And, Mr. Catherwood, what are some of those parallels?
Well, one of the obvious parallels is how many troops should we have? That was a big debate in the 1920s. Winston Churchill felt that the troop levels were too big and he wanted to reduce them. But once he started reducing his troop levels, he then realised, of course, that your opportunity to do things were more circumscribed. It's what Michael Ignatieff, the writer who's at Harvard University, calls Empire Light, L-I-T-E, and he was like Donald Rumsfeld today, trying to have an empire on the cheap, without all the complexities that normally went with colonial rule.
Churchill, as this colonial secretary in the 1920s, was trying to find an inexpensive way to deal with this area, Mesopotamia, where suddenly there was no government.
That's a very parallel situation once more. And the reason why it had disappeared in Churchill's time was again through military conquest, because the Ottoman Empire had gone to war against Britain and France and their original ally, Russia, and so consequently Britain had to find various means of invading the Ottoman Empire. But of course, once they conquered the Ottoman Empire, there was suddenly no administration in sight, and they had in 1920 exactly the kind of rebellion against British rule that the British and Americans are experiencing now in this interim period before we hand over to an Iraqi government.
Was there ever a specific country roughly within the borders of what we now know as Iraq that was its own nation?
That's one of the things that I try and say in the book, that Iraq is actually, to me, is a complete invention of Winston Churchill and his officials at a conference they had in Cairo in 1921. So in fact, Iraq was created out of three provinces that really had nothing much to do with each other at all, other than the fact that they were all under British rule. And in fact, if you look at one of the photos in my book of the Cairo conference, you'll see that with one exception, an Egyptian wearing a fez, everybody who's determining the fate of Iraq is actually white British. In some cases, I mean, they were archaeologists like T.E. Lawrence, Lawrence of Arabia, but their real expertise, of course, was on the area as it had been thousands of years ago rather than what it was now. And they tended to have a slightly dewy-eyed, romantic view of the Bedouin Arab. But in fact, of course, Iraq had huge cities in it, like Kirkuk, like Mosul, like Basra, like Baghdad, of course. And therefore, it was completely different. And this is what's scary, that you had people who really were quite ignorant taking these major decisions.
To learn more about Iraq's political history, we've invited in Judith Yaffe of the National Defense University here in Washington. And Ms. Yaffe, we've just heard Christopher Catherwood point out that the British created Iraq for their own purposes, but was there any tradition of self-rule in that area?
Yes and no. The area before the British came was under Turkish rule for about 500 years. There were large areas of virtual self-rule because the Turks didn't travel there. For example, the holy cities, the shrine cities, were virtually independent. Arabs of Iraq served as loyal citizens of the Ottoman Empire. The Ottomans recruited among them for their bureaucrats, military officers, civil servants, educated in the best schools in Istanbul, in Turkey. And I think until about the first decade of the 20th century, Iraq's Arabs from the Basra, Baghdad, Mosul provinces, served well in the empire.
Now, you said there was some local governance then.
Some, but it was mainly because there was an absence of the state. The state certainly was there and in the cities, but there were areas that had what I would call virtual self-rule. And after the First World War starts, that's especially true, for example, in Najaf and Karbala, which were virtually self-governing. There was very little control in those areas.
So there wasn't democracy in Iraq.
Oh, no, no, no. Don't get me wrong. We're not talking democracy, but we're talking about local governance, tribal sheikhs, the religious clerics who had traditional loyalties do them. But the tribal sheikhs were very important.
During the British occupation of Iraq, did the British try to foster any democratic institutions there?
Institutions? Yes. Democracy? That's a different issue. They created a parliament. They created the cabinet structure. They created an elite, people who served in these, and some eventually who were even elected to these parliaments. But the elections were pretty much controlled first by the British and then by succeeding Arab governments. So you always had the king, the regent, and the prime minister, so that his candidates were controlled, his opposition was dealt with. Saddam did not invent political prisoners and torture and rule by fear. It existed to a much lesser extent. Saddam simply improved on these techniques.
When you analyzed Iraq for the Central Intelligence Agency, as you did up through the 1990s, did people assume that Iraq could not escape this undemocratic history?
No, I don't think so. The assumption was it was impossible for the Iraqis to escape Saddam, that given what a pervasive and total control he had over the population that was so cowed, so weakened, where anyone who had a sense of being an intellectual leader, even in his own party, or maybe I should say especially in his own party, had long been eliminated. You survived by getting along, by trying not to be political. Maybe you joined the party. They gave you some kind of protection, or because you needed to keep your job. But there would be no sense. They were very good at weeding out any opposition.
What does it take for Iraq to overcome history?
Time, first of all. They have to learn the experience of building civil society, democratic institutions. It's not enough to have institutions. An institution is a building. British could create a parliament. The Iraqis could have one for 60 years. It's a building. A constitution's a piece of paper. They need to recreate these institutions and documents in their own image. They need to have a government that shows it's strong, it is able to establish local security, and it will protect the people, not be against the people. You want to create the environment for new vocabulary. You know, in a sense, I compare it to the American Revolution, the real American Revolution, which was in 1800, when John Adams won a hard-fought election, and they didn't go to war afterwards.
Judith Yaffe of the National Defense University speaking with us a few days before the transfer of power in Iraq on June 30th. Thanks very much.
You're very welcome.